Straight Shooter with Stephen A.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to this latest edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A., coming at you as I love to do every single Wednesday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airways of SiriusXM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. The number to call up, as always, is 866-967-6887. That's 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. You know, I got a lot of stuff to get into because clearly, this is day 22 of the government shutdown. It's now the second longest funding lapse in modern history, eclipsed only by the 35-day shutdown in late 2018 and early 2019 when Donald Trump was in his first term as president. But before I get into that, I want to play some interesting sound for you, because in light of the whole brouhaha that I've been embroiled in involving Representative Jasmine Crockett out of Texas, I wanted to take the liberty, even with my swollen jaw, courtesy of emergency root canal surgery. By the way, I'm sitting up here looking like a chipmunk, for crying out loud. But I'm here. I wanted to make sure that I played this sound because I wanted to get to a bigger point in talking to all of y'all tonight about everything that's been transpiring. We've got Governor Pritzker from Illinois coming on the show. We've got the representative out of Arizona coming on the show as well, who's waiting to be sworn in by Speaker Mike Johnson. We got all of that stuff coming up. But before I get into any of that, I want you to listen to Representative Jasmine Crockett out of the state of Texas. This is her on the Lori Daniel Favors show on Urban View Radio, SiriusXM, Channel 186 earlier. Listen to what Representative Crockett had to say.
Every other day, there's a poll that comes out that makes it clear that I can win the primary for the U.S. Senate race in Texas. Oh. And I am looking, because if you want to take my seat of 766,000 away, I feel like there has to be some karma in that, to where I take your seat that is for 30 million away. So we are, you know, the primary is the primary. That's cool, but you got to win the general. So we are doing some testing here shortly to see if I can expand the electorate. I don't really believe in traditional polling, because traditional polling, basically you call somebody or you contact them however you're going to contact them, and you ask them if they plan to vote. And if they say they're not planning to vote, then you end the questions. But the reality is that when we ended up with the President Barack Obama, it was because of people that had never been inspired to vote deciding that they wanted to vote for him. Same thing with Donald Trump. And I think that the key to winning Texas isn't about looking at the current electorate. It's about expanding the electorate. So the question will be whether or not we believe that we've got enough juice to expand the electorate. And looking at those crosstabs and looking at which demographics are more inclined to come out who normally do not vote. If we can expand the electorate, then I will strongly be considering hopping in the Senate race.
Now we're getting somewhere. Once again, welcome to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. coming at you on POTUS Radio, Channel 124. That was Representative Jasmine Crockett talking on Urban View Radio, Channel 126, a bit earlier. This is the kind of stuff that I was talking about. This is kind of the stuff that I was making noise over, okay? This is the kind of stuff that I was making noise over. Because we have to understand that right now, Donald Trump and the Republican Party are vulnerable. Now, I'm not here to take sides, okay, in terms of a political party. But I'm unapologetic of the fact that I don't support the way that the president behaves. And I'd like to see a bigger grown-up in office from time to time. I've said that on many, many occasions, and I'm not about to backtrack from that now. But when I made news last week, which ultimately I had to apologize for simply because it was the right thing to do, because people took my words and ran away with it, meaning something totally different than I wanted to be absorbed. When I talked about Representative Jasmine Crockett and I asked the simple question of, hey, calling the president out his name, going off like that, is that going to work for you? I wanted an answer. It wasn't to chastise anybody. I literally wanted an answer, and we just heard it. She's looking at 766,000 people that she represents, and now she's entertaining the possibility of representing millions. That's what she's talking about here. This is a woman that's educated. She's a woman that has a law degree. She's a woman licensed to practice law in Texas, Arkansas, and federally. Well, guess what senators do? They elect federal officials, or they put them in office. When the president makes a recommendation or whatever, they confirm them, rather. This is what happens when you're in a senator's seat. This is why it's a big deal. And you have to think calculatingly, and you have to think with a plan, and you have to strategize. It can't be just about protesting. I love seeing folks in the streets making sure that their voices are heard. In the United States of America, it's apropos. It's absolutely the right thing to do. When you are appalled by something, when you are put off about something, when you think that the very quality of life that you've come to love and be identified with and you gravitate to as an American citizen is in danger of being compromised in your eyes, you should speak out peacefully. You should say something about it peacefully. You should make sure that your voices are heard in droves. Absolutely true. But in the same breath, you got to understand whether or not that's going to be enough. See, right here on this show, this is what we're going to do. Every single week that I'm on this show, this is what we're going to do. I'm about what's in the best interest of the country. That's who I am. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I can't stand either side. Because I think the political apparatus has served to divide and polarize this country in ways that it may never have. And I'm appalled by it. But in a binary system that we live in, we got to make a decision when it comes to going to the polls. And those decisions are based primarily on policy, but also on trust, on spirit, on an innate belief that somebody has the best interest of the country in mind instead of just themselves or their party. And we have to operate accordingly. And that's what we've been looking for as we talk about a plethora of issues that we have to attack day after day after day. I'm very happy that Jasmine Crockett is entertaining running for a Senate seat. I want to see Ted Cruz challenged. I want to see John Cornyn challenged. I want to see something like that. I want the Democrats to regain some level of power on Capitol Hill, primarily because I don't like one-party monopolies. I don't like one-party monopolization in this country. I don't think that's good. To me, if somebody got the White House, somebody else should have the Senate or the House or both. You should be forced to work with one another. You should be forced to walk across the aisle. You should be forced to engage in dialogue and have a modicum of decency towards one another. Why? Because when you do otherwise, it scares the living hell out of Americans. If you see people going at each other with fire and brimstone, calling one another out, at every turn, completely unwilling to negotiate and work with one another, you know what you have? You have a government shutdown. That's what you have. Federal government shuts down, national park visitor centers closed, Department of Veteran Affairs regional offices closed, Social Security benefit verifications are suspended, certain small business loan approvals are now paused, Bureau of Labor Statistics ceases to release economic and employment data. Great Smoky Mountains National Park resumes full operations. That's what they were talking about October 4th. National Gallery of Arts closed its doors October 5th. You just look at all of this stuff, and you saw me on a town hall last week on News Nation, where a young man who's an air traffic controller, clearly making more than six figures, came up to the microphone, spoke in front of a national audience, and said that he couldn't stay because he had to go out and work for DoorDash to make some money because he wasn't getting paid by the federal government, even though he had worked earlier in the day. But we had three elected officials on stage with us who play a role in the shutdown actually existing, all of whom are getting paid. These are the kind of things that I'm talking about. These are the kind of things that we want to fight. These are the kind of things that we want to fend off. And we want to do so from a strategic perspective, because what we want to do, ladies and gentlemen, we want both sides butting heads with one another in a fashion that allows us to decipher who has the best strategy. That's what we have. That's what we want. We're going to get into a lot of conversations today. We're going to talk about the violence in the streets of Chicago, because we want to talk about Trump's insistence that the National Guard be utilized in certain areas of this country, whether it's Memphis, whether it's Portland, whether it's Chicago, whether it's Los Angeles, whether it's Washington, D.C., etc. We want to find out, is he justified in doing so? And if he's not justified in doing so, why can't he be stopped? If he is justified in doing so, but you want to resist, why would you want to resist? We want to talk about those things. But in the process of doing so, we also have to recognize that we have to talk about a president that, and for me personally, just put me out on Front Street. It's the number one reason I didn't vote for him. I don't even get to his policies before I get to his behavior. Protesters for the No Kings March. He makes an AI video of him as a king with a crown, piloting an airplane that spews feces on the protesters in a country that encourages you to exercise your freedom of speech. That's how you would treat them? Yes, to some people on the right, it's mocking. It's funny. He can be hilarious in his own way in their eyes and all of that other stuff. How about disrespectful? How about juvenile? How about beneath the office of the presidency of the United States of America? How about juvenile? How about belligerent? And if you're a Democrat, let's be fair. If he truly was a king, could you protest? If he truly was a king, could you have mass protests and get away with it? Is that something that you could do? These are the kind of questions that the other side are going to ask, because they're making a play that is much ado about nothing, that you're choosing to just react and overreact to every little thing that he does. You know that he can be a bit juvenile, to say the least, and he's going to go out there strictly to bait you. And when you're in the streets fighting him and fighting ICE, you know what he's saying? He's saying, hey, they want illegal immigrants here. They were completely okay with open borders. They were completely okay with 12 to 14 million crossing those borders in the United States. This is what they want to do with your country. When he's making that argument, what's your response to it? What's your strategy? That's Stephen A. I didn't say I had the answers. I said, that's Stephen A. I'm the guy that asked those kind of questions. So when you have people coming in and they're talking about whatever it was that I may have said about the Jasmine Crockett or whatever I would have said about critics out there, you know, aiming their ire in my direction, they're not realizing you do this for a living all the time. I haven't. My objective is to provoke the conversation so you can have it and you can educate the people out there so they could see you talking about this. They could hear your salient points of views. And as a result, it will edify their minds, elevate their intellectual thinking. And as a result, they'll be better off because of it. Rather than hating on me, see me for what I'm trying to do. Be a conduit for dialogue. Because I'm not here with all the answers. I'm not here to tell you that I have all the answers. I'm here to tell you that based on the preponderance of evidence that I've seen, that I've witnessed, this is how I feel at this particular moment. Open-minded enough to let you know I can change my mind as the facts draw in. That's it. That's it. But a lot of times people don't want to deal with that. We can't afford not to deal with that. We have to be better. All of us. The Republicans are very, very simple. Free market capitalism, control our borders, national security, thriving economy, safety in the streets. That's the attitude. Whatever it takes to get it, we don't give a damn. We got a shutdown. They're saying it's the Affordable Care Act subsidies. The Democrats are holding out for that. The Republicans are saying, CR, continue a resolution. What are you talking about? There's not a reason to shut down the government. Trump is on the record. We will not be extorted by the Democrats. His attitude is, we got all the leverage in the world. Chuck Schumer, according to Speaker Mike Johnson, is holding up the whole process. Why? Because he's at the mercy of the progressive left, because he knows that AOC is coming for his Senate seat in 2028 in all likelihood. And whereas he avoided or averted the shutdown before, he can't afford to go against them this time around because he will have no support. So the Democrats have their own problem in the eyes of the Republicans. The Republicans are saying it's not our fault. But meanwhile, the American citizen, hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions of people, are furloughed or fired, not getting any paychecks. And they playing politics up on Capitol Hill while they're still getting paid. So I ask you, as an American citizen listening to this show today, why the hell don't we have laws in place to make sure they don't get paid? Why the hell don't we have laws in place to make sure they don't get their health insurance? Why can't we make sure that our elected officials are every bit as compromised as they make us when they're not doing the job we sent them to Capitol Hill to do? Why are we not doing that? These are questions. I'm starving for answers. And every single week that I come on here, I'm going to be starving for answers. Because that's who I am. And that's who you all should be too. 866-967-6887 is the number to call up. That's 866-96-POTUS. That is the number to call in to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. right here over the airwaves of POTUS Radio, channel 124. I got a lot of stuff to get into. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, he's going to be on the show. He's got a lot to say about Trump. Trump's had a lot to say about him. I got to get into that. Okay? Adelita Grijalva, the Democratic representative, elected out of Arizona, but yet to have been sworn in by Speaker Mike Johnson. She's coming on the show, too. See, around here, we ain't just talking. We talking to the people that matter. Because we want stuff done about the subject matters that we tackling, not just to give lip service to it. It's what we do on Straight Shooter. It's what we're going to continue to do. Back with more Straight Shooter with yours. Yours truly, Stephen A. Smith in the house. Governor Pritzker up next. Don't go away. 24 minutes past hour number one back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Smith, coming at you every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. over the airwaves of SiriusXM, POTUS Radio, channel 124. Before Governor J.B. Pritzker from Illinois comes on to the show, I thought it would be apropos to give y'all some insight into the back and forth that's been going on between the governor of Illinois and, of course, President Donald Trump. President Donald Trump has called Chicago a murder capital. He's decried the violence that's been going on in the streets of Chicago. He's been very, very abrasive with the governor, and the governor has returned the favor and been very abrasive right back at him. So just to play some insights, first things first, let's put up this quote from President Trump. This was October 8th. President Trump says about Chicago Mayor Johnson, "Chicago mayor should be in jail for failing to protect ICE officers. Governor Pritzker also." In the aftermath of that, Pritzker and Donald Forth has gone back and forth. Let's play some sound from Governor Pritzker first, please. Play that, please.
President of the United States, in the last 24 hours, called for you to be imprisoned. I want to give you an opportunity. We've seen your reaction on social media, but I want to hear what you have to say back to the President of the United States.
Well, let's start with the idea that this is a convicted felon. I mean, think about that. Who is threatening to jail me. I got to say, this guy's unhinged. He's insecure. He's a wannabe dictator. And there's one thing I really want to say to Donald Trump. If you come for my people, you come through me. So come and get me.
It's Governor Pritzker. Obviously, the president, Donald Trump, had something to say in response to all of that. Let's hear what he's had to say.
If you look at Chicago, Chicago's a great city where there's a lot of crime. And if the governor can't do the job, we'll do the job.
Plain and simple. That's what Donald Trump says. Let me throw this by y'all. This is the numbers. A city in decline is what they're saying. This is Chicago. The thing is, they're saying a city in decline of crime. According to the latest data from the Chicago Police Department and city officials, violent crime in Chicago has dropped significantly in 2025. Homicides are down 32% year to date, with 240 recorded through July, putting the city on track for fewer than 500 homicides this year, the lowest in 6 years. Shooting incidents have decreased by 37%, with 865 reported through July. Robberies are down 31.9%, and vehicular hijackings have plummeted by 49%. Overall, violent crime has declined 21.6%, and total crime complaints are down 13% compared to 2024. Now, from Trump's perspective, it's a city in crisis. Why? Despite improvements, President Trump has doubled down on his portrayal of Chicago as a lawless zone. Over Labor Day weekend, 54 people were reportedly shot, including 8 fatalities, prompting Trump to declare on Truth social media, "Chicago is the worst and most dangerous city in the world by far. I will solve the current problem just like I did in D.C." On the line with us right now, he is the 43rd governor of the great state of Illinois. He's the one and only Governor J.B. Pritzker. He's on the line with us right now. Hello, sir. Good afternoon. How are you?
How are you, Stephen A.? I'm doing okay, by the way, because the Bears are doing okay. We finally have a quarterback.
Well, first of all, congratulations on that. You're actually going to be all right, but I'm going to just give you caution because they were 4-2 at this time last year, and then they nosedive. So I would tell you wait another week before you get too excited about them. But we can talk about that another time. Governor, thank you so much for your time. Let's get right to it. Earlier this month, President Trump posted on Truth Social that you and Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson should be in jail for failing to protect ICE officers. What's your response to the president's suggestion, sir?
Well, first of all, the president of the United States threatening to jail elected officials improperly and with no cause is something that I haven't seen in my entire lifetime. It doesn't happen except under this president. He regularly breaches the Constitution. We've been on the ground here doing everything that we can to keep peace when ICE and CBP are literally marching down the streets with automatic weapons in downtown Chicago. They're zip-tying children. They're taking elderly people in the middle of the night, sticking them in U-Hauls. These are U.S. citizens often. And they're just stopping black and brown people on the streets and asking them to prove their citizenship. No probable cause and no due process. So, I don't have much to say except that, you know, I've said it before. President thinks he can jail me. Come get me.
So are you of the mindset, are you saying, because, you know, I've spoken to Tom Bordezard, Palm Homan on several occasions and others, and he's saying that statistics prove that the vast majority of those detained have been, criminals and illegal migrants. That's what he's saying, that the vast majority of them have been criminals. It's not true that it's U.S. citizens that this has happened to by and large. Certainly there are mistakes that are made here and there, but his position, his contention is that that's just not true. Are you saying that that's false?
He's conflating the people that you're stopping, that are undocumented, right? He's conflating just folks who are undocumented with the worst of the worst that they said they were going to go after, right? We want them to come get the violent criminals. We love that. We love help doing that. That's not what they're doing. In fact, that building that got attacked in Chicago and South Shore that had 130 people in it, we're talking about 2 members of Tren de Aragua that they were going after. But instead, they detained everybody in that building. We have people who live in Chicago 10, 20, 30 years. They overstay their visa at some point in their lives or they're undocumented. That's true. There are people like that in Chicago. But they're often people who are holding down jobs and paying taxes. They're people who are following the law and have been their entire time in the United States. And I think that we ought to have laws that protect them. In fact, that invite people like them, hardworking people that are following the law. And instead, let's go after the people that are actually doing wrong that are undocumented. And again, the percentages of those, very, very small.
Governor, you just stated for the record that you would love to receive assistance when it comes to certain issues like that. And you said you're happy for them to do get the violent criminals off the streets, et cetera. Have you ever officially asked the federal government for assistance with the National Guard?
Indeed, not with the National Guard, because that is not what we need on the streets of the city of Chicago. But we do need, what we do need are civilian law enforcement. What I've asked for is FBI, ATF, DEA, come get the drug dealers. Come help us get guns off the streets. Come help get the gang members off the streets. Indeed, we've been doing that for many years with those agencies at the local and state level, working with the feds. But that's not what he's offering now. He never did offer any of that. In fact, he's repositioned people from those agencies to ICE and CBP when we actually need help on the streets with some of these other issues.
Why would he do that? Why would he do that? Explain to my audience, why would he make that transition? Why, rather than just, like you said, the FBI or anybody else, rather than just doing that, why would he transition these people to ICE? What's the reason for that in your estimation?
Look, as you know, he said that he was going to come after immigration. He thinks that what he's doing now is actually helping. It's not. It is literally causing mayhem on the ground, which is something that he wants. Why does he want it? Why does he want to send troops in? I will tell you what my theory is about this, and I believe I'm right, which is because he's talked about this for some time. Let's go back to 2020 when he said that the election was stolen from him. It wasn't. And it was Michael Flynn that told the president, and he repeated it, that maybe they should just seize the ballot boxes with the military. Maybe they should go to where the ballot box, and then they should count the votes themselves. Here we are in 2025. He is becoming more unpopular. He is likely to lose the 2026 elections, and he's sending troops into American cities, and particularly in blue states, in blue cities, to put them on the ground, get us used to the idea of having military on the ground. I believe because he then will say, well, I'm going to go protect our polling places in Illinois. And then if he is losing the elections, meaning the Congress, he will frankly just seize the ballot boxes.
So you think he's going to? So you're saying that the president of the United States is going to try to steal an election? Is that what you're saying?
This is a guy who tried to steal the election back in 2020, and he would do it again. Yeah, I think he's proven that he's willing to do that.
ICE agents have been active in Chicago, leading the clashes with residents and protesters, and in one case, serious injury to an ICE officer and the death of a suspect. A federal court in Chicago has ordered sweeping new limits on ICE operations in the Midwest. Explain what that ruling means, sir.
Yeah, vitally important. And I want to also just step back and say how important it is our judiciary is stepping in here. We have to have checks and balances because right now the Congress is not acting as a check and balance. We need the judiciary. And indeed, we've been winning in court here in Chicago and in Illinois. And the ruling that limits what ICE can do, remember, they're just telling ICE live by the rules, the protocols of being a federal agent. That's not what they're doing now, right? They're literally wearing masks, not telling people who they are, driving up in unidentified cars. And banging down doors. That's not the way we do law enforcement in the United States at all. They got to identify themselves as a result of that. In fact, that case that you're talking about, that was one of the rulings. They have to identify themselves. There are lots of other protocols they're being ordered to follow. Also, we're winning on the subject of keeping National Guard out of our cities. Now, I know that in Portland, it's now been ruled that they can come in. But, you know, that court ruled that Chicago is different than Portland.
How?
They said that Chicago, in fact, we have not closed ICE facilities here. Our protesters have not been allowed to close any of the facilities. In Portland, they did. That's how they differentiated. We, in fact, have made sure that our protesters are kept safe and within some distance, close enough so they can protest and have their voices heard, but far enough away so that the federal agents can do their job. But they need to do that job while following the law.
Governor Pritzker, I got to ask you this because, listen, I'm a black man raised in the streets of New York City, and I can't tell you on how many occasions I've been incredibly alarmed by, you know, hearing one thing after another about the violence in the city of Chicago. I know you're not the mayor of Chicago, you're the governor of the state of Illinois, and I respect that. But I know that Chicago is not the murder capital. There's at least six different cities that are worse, for crying out loud. St. Louis, I believe, has been measured as the worst. But I still ask this question. It's been incredibly alarming to hear one year after another, what's been going on in the streets of Chicago. And even though the numbers are down, and I've read them before you came on there, homicides are down 32%, shooting incidents have decreased by 37%, robberies are down by 31.9%, all of that being true, it still alarms me that so much stuff has gone on in the streets of Chicago spanning decades. How concerned have you been about it? And most importantly, how do you address local families asking for ICE and local law enforcement just to keep them safe? Because that has happened.
I appreciate you asking that question. When I came into office, my predecessor, the Republican governor, actually had cut funding for our state police and had cut community violence intervention programs to zero. And so I came in and you saw, what do you know, an increase in crime across the state. And so we invested in, I've added so many more state police than have been there in quite a long time. And we've invested in community violence intervention, and it's working. And you can see it if you look back 4 years. Every year we've reduced significantly. It's now homicide rate down 50% now from 4 years ago. Well, there's a lot more work to do. I don't want to suggest to you that we're done. We're not. And that's why, once again, we continue to make the investments here. But Donald Trump actually defunded the police when he moved all of those agents over into ICE and CBP and took them out of civilian law enforcement. And when he took away the community violence intervention grants that were being given to cities all across the country. So I don't understand. It's like the man is, he's got schizophrenia or something, right? On the one hand, he says he's a law and order Republican. On the other hand, he's defunding the police. I mean, which is it? And he's not helping us, I can tell you that.
So when you say he's defunding the police, how come this is a case that hasn't been made more profoundly by the Democrats? I'm listening to you saying, I'm going like this. Well, damn. I wish I had heard that on Meet the Press. I wish I had heard that on Face the Nation. I wish I had heard that on This Week on ABC. I mean, where are these folks making this argument to point out that the man that's supposed to be about law and order is actually defunding local police departments in these respective cities to actually fight the crime that he's abhorring so much? How come those cases haven't been made more effectively?
Well, I don't disagree with you, and I've been disappointed that there aren't more Democrats out there making this argument and fighting the fight. I mean, I'm not a guy who likes to pick fights. I'm not the one who picked the fights, you know. I'm actually somebody who works together with Republicans and looks for opportunities to do that, but not when they're attacking me, you know, and they're attacking my city and my state. And that's what Donald Trump's been doing. And he gets it all wrong so often. You know, Illinois is the 19th safest state. I'd like to say we're the top five, but we're not. We're 19th, but we're not 50th. And we're not getting any help to make it better. I'd like to get better. I'm doing it here, and so are the folks who run the cities and counties of our state. We got a lot of work to do. I don't doubt that at all. And I know that, and you can see it in the funding that I put into the programs that are working. Give us the help to do the things that work. It doesn't help to send troops in. It doesn't help to badmouth our state and our city. And indeed, that's why the business community stood with me, as I said very loudly and clearly, and I think it got covered nationally, that don't send troops here. Please send us other kinds of help.
Do your residents, dare I say, particularly your Black ones, believe or feel the same way that you do in the city of Chicago, if not the state of Illinois right now?
Yes, vast majority do, that what they believe, and I think they're right, is that we need more help. I've stood in front of crowds in the Black community regularly. I talk about the fact that, you know, that because I've been asked, you know, do you want to defund the police? I say, I don't want to defund the police. When I dial 911, I want to make sure a police officer comes if I need one.
Absolutely.
And so we got to invest, not defund. And by the way, big rounds of applause. I'm talking in the Black community, right? And these are the neighborhoods that are most put upon by crime. And we need, but it's not just police, like I said, you know, and by the way, it's not just crime, community violence intervention programs, which are working. It's also about just making sure that people have investment in their small businesses and that we're attracting businesses into the community so we can create jobs and that people can afford to pay for housing. This is a problem, I mean, all across America, but we're trying to address it here. Again, that's the kind of help that we need from the federal government, not the, you know, the sending of troops and the demilitarizing of our American cities.
Well, Governor Pritzker, what about the argument that, as particularly when it pertains to immigration, immigration is a federal issue, not a local issue. They talk about Article 2, if I remember correctly, that gives the president the right to address illegal immigration. We look at Barack Obama, for example. He deported more than 4 million people. He deported more people than Trump did in his first term. But the Republicans will argue nobody was accusing him of being a king. Why is it that this kind of rhetoric is being thrown in President Donald Trump's direction, but it wasn't thrown in Barack Obama's direction when he deported just as many, if not as many, if not more people than Trump? What does a Democrat say to that assertion?
Look, you didn't hear, this wasn't happening under previous presidents. What's happening now is the First Amendment is being breached. The Fourth and Fifth Amendments, these are due process, probable cause, you know, are being breached. The Tenth Amendment, which is states' rights, he's trying to send troops into our states. All of these amendments are under attack by this president. That is why people are standing up and speaking out about, we don't want any kings. What they're trying to say is we have a constitutional republic. We cannot tear it apart because one guy at the top is willing to throw it all aside. The rest of us are not willing to throw it all aside. I believe in our constitutional republic. Let's reinvest in that. Let's commit ourselves to that. But when you're tearing down the institutions of government, as he is, I think we have no choice, and especially because Democrats don't have control of Congress, right? And those of us in the states, you know, we have control of our states, but we're being put upon by this government. We've got to stand up and speak out, and the American people are doing that now. And you saw that millions and millions of people, and more than 100,000 in Chicago showing up. And when I talked to people that were out there, Republicans, independents, people who've never shown up at a protest before are out there speaking up and speaking out. It's not just about ICE, but when ICE is tackling 15-year-old brown people who are U.S. citizens, when they're stopping a woman coming out of the Waukegan City Hall who was just paying a parking ticket and she's a U.S. citizen and she gets detained and thrown into the back of an unmarked car by guys wearing masks, this is not the America that I think we all want. And I think that's why people are showing up at these
rallies.
What
about the argument on the part of the Republican side when they'll say sanctuary cities and sanctuary states are not what the American people really want either? And the Democrats are fighting an uphill battle because if they don't veer away from that, ultimately they're going to lose just like they lost in 2024, where they lost every swing state. And obviously younger voters, black voters, women, et cetera, et cetera. It was a slippage compared to what happened in 2020, compared to what happened in 2020, compared to 2024. What do you say to that?
Well, you mentioned it a little earlier, and I'll repeat something that you said, which is the federal government is in charge of immigration. And it's why, by the way, I sent a letter to President Biden during his term telling him, you know, we got to do something about the border and you've got to help our cities. If you're going to have all these people coming into our cities, we need help. We didn't get the help that we needed. And frankly, it is the federal government's job to deal with immigration. What we've said is the reason we have laws on the books like the Trust Act is because we want our local law enforcement fighting crime on the streets of our state and not pursuing what the federal government should be pursuing themselves, which is with ICE. And we had ICE in Chicago before President Trump and during President Obama's term. And we continue to have ICE. The difference is ICE is acting with no protocols anymore. In fact, they're doing things that are illegal and certainly against the training that is normally given to federal agents. And nobody's holding them accountable. There's no supervisor. There's no inspector general like there has been in previous administrations that's holding anybody accountable. And it's clear that the president is willing to pardon people for breaching the law, from breaking the law. So, I this is why I think there's a lot of frustration about it.
What if the numbers, Governor, and thank you again so much for your time, but what if the numbers dwindle from a crime statistical perspective, and it proves that it's better that he's had the National Guard in these cities. I'm just speaking in a hypothetical, only from this perspective. We just sort of know King's protest. We see what the Democrats are doing in order to combat what they believe he's throwing in their direction. Do you believe y'all are in a winning situation? I'm not talking about you as the governor of the state of Illinois. I'm talking about the Democratic Party. How do you feel about the positioning that y'all presently have at your disposal right now, knowing that the 2026 elections, the midterms, are coming up? Do you believe you're in a better position than you were a couple of years ago to win back some seats as a party, considering how things are going? Or do you believe that some of this has fallen on deaf ears on the part of the American people when it really, really counts?
Well, you know, so many of the promises that President Trump made, he has not lived up to. Indeed, what he said was he was going to bring down grocery prices. That certainly hasn't happened. He said that he was going to make life better for people by making housing more affordable. That certainly hasn't happened. Over and over again, the promises that he made to farmers, by the way, my soybean farmers in my state, we're the largest soybean producer in the entire country, are suffering mightily. Billions of dollars of sales that would have otherwise occurred are not happening because of the tariffs that he put in place. And he's sending $40 billion to Argentina and allowing them to sell soybeans to China. And we're getting no help. He's bailing out Argentina. He's not bailing out the farmers of America. So, yeah, I do think Democrats are in a much, much better position today than even last year. And I think that we've got to stick to the message that I made me a Democrat in the first place, and I have been my whole life. And that's that we fight for the middle class. We fight for the working class. We fight for the most vulnerable. And we're the ones who created, you know, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, the things that really lift
party. As a party, yes, but I would challenge you, not you personally, but I would challenge the party from the standpoint that when we look at the Republican Party for so many years, we said they're the party of the elite. That's who they care about, et cetera, et cetera. When we look at the 2026 election, the 2020 election, the 2016 election, 2020, 2024, you have Democrats saying the elitists put these folks in position, whether it was a Hillary Rodham Clinton, whether it was a Joe Biden, whether it was ultimately Kamala Harris, and the relationship between the Democratic Party and the working class citizens of America has eroded. You're making an argument that that's no longer the case, that that's not something that we could say about the Democratic Party. I'm asking, sir.
I'm making an argument that the only way you win elections if you're a Democrat is to stand up for democratic values. And I was just articulating what they are. We are the party of voting rights and civil rights, right? We got to stand up for those. We got to make sure that people actually can earn a good living. $7.25 is a minimum wage you cannot survive on, $14,000 a year. We ought to be standing up and saying we got to raise the minimum wage in the United States. That's just an example. But the point is that we haven't been saying those things. And that's why we lose elections, right? When we're not talking about the things that actually at the kitchen table people talk about every day.
So do you believe that the Democratic Party is going to listen to you? Because I don't have any disagreement with what you're saying. I'm wondering whether or not they're going to listen to you, because you're saying the kind of things I think the Democratic Party should be saying. Are they going to listen to Governor Pritzker?
Well, here in Illinois, they do. And we've done the things that I just talked about, right? And we've stood up for health care and made sure that we got rid of prior authorization and made it easier for people to get health care. We raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour in my state. We built infrastructure. I mean, we did it before the federal government ever even got around to it. Creating jobs, lifting up people's earnings, making sure that they have safe workplaces. These are all things that we're doing in Illinois. So Democrats in Illinois are listening. I can't speak for the rest of the country.
Well, let me say this to you. It's not an insult. It's a compliment, because I wish I had your money. You're worth billions, okay? You're a Democrat, right? And I know you know business. My attitude is Governor Pritzker ready to go up against whoever the Republican nominee is going to be for the presidency of the United States in 2028? Is that something you're willing to entertain?
Well, I appreciate your asking. I'm just running for re-election as governor of Illinois right now. And whatever decision I make about anything in the future always has to do with what's best for my state. And what can I do to really serve the people of my state the best?
But isn't it true that you're just as worried about the country as much as you are about your state at this particular moment in time, sir?
I am. And that's one of the reasons why my message is something that I have you know, articulated across the country, not just in my state, because I do want to make sure that Democrats win in 2026, because the only way that we're going to be able to stop Donald Trump from taking away people's constitutional rights is if we take one or the other House of Congress. And I think these elections mostly are local. I do think we need a national message as a party. And I just talked to you about some of what I think that is involved in that. But I am trying to do that and help people across the country. I've done that, you know, long before I was governor of the state of Illinois. But I'm happy to be able to do it now. And people have invited me to help.
My last question to you would be, has Donald Trump made you want to be president even more so, or actually entertain the notion of being president even more so, just because of who he is? And I mean that knowing that I don't expect him to circumvent the 22nd Amendment of the Constitution and try to run for a third term, but it's clear he has no intentions of going away, that he wants his impact felt far beyond the year 2028. And if the Democratic Party is going to be able to do anything to offset that, they're going to have a strong voice in office that can pull that off. Does that make you more enticed by the national possibilities, or do you just ignore all of that and fixate yourself on the state of Illinois?
Look, I ran for office because I believe what I articulated to you, and I support candidates who believe in those things, too. And I think we've got a hell of a bench on the Democratic side. We'll see what happens in 2028, but I want to make sure that we get a president of the United States who's actually standing up for working class people. Again, that's what our party's about. And so I'm going to help whoever that is. And I think there are a whole bunch of people that are qualified to do that, and maybe more so than quite some time now. It's been a while. But I'm very pleased about, you know, the fact that we have a number of people that you probably would point to and say, you know, they're possibly going to run for president.
Governor Pritzker, I'm honored to have had your time. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to join me. I learned a lot from talking to you, and I thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I know you didn't have to do this, so thank you.
Thanks, Stephen A.
All right. One and only J.B. Pritzker, governor of the state of Illinois. It's got the numbers on the side, that's for sure. Made a profound argument, that's for sure. A lot of stuff to get into it, no question about it. Have a wonderful evening, Governor Pritzker. Really, really appreciate it. 866-967-6887. That's 866-967-6887. 866-96-BOTUS. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with your boy Stephen A. Back with hour number two in a minute. What kind of stuff you want to hear? What Governor J.B. Pritzker for Illinois just came on and said. What did he say? He said, hey, you know, we're not acting like we don't need help. It's the PD, it's the FBI, it's the ATF, whatever the case may be. Yes, we could use assistance. It doesn't have to be ICE. That's what he said. Of course we could use assistance. It doesn't have to be ICE. He talked about Donald Trump being about law and order, but taking resources from law enforcement agencies to put into ICE, and how that facilitates the perception of his agenda. So if you create the kind of havoc that he's created, making it seem like stuff is so vile and so awful and can't be contained in any way, it feeds in to him facilitating and positioning himself to help the Republicans win the midterm. It's strategy. My personal belief is that one of the biggest things that's going on with Trump is that he doesn't want a focus on the Epstein files, and everything that he's done has been to distract us from the Epstein files. That's my personal opinion based on what I'm seeing. That's just how I look at it. But anyway, you slice it, it's politics as usual. We all know that. Adelita Grijalva, the Democratic representative, voted in Arizona. Not sworn in, though. Still waiting to be sworn in by Speaker Mike Johnson. She's up next. I'm going to talk to her about it as well. I brought up those Epstein files. That's got something to do, at least in her eyes and those of others, as to why she hasn't officially been sworn in as of yet. So we can't wait to talk to her about it as well. It's a lot of stuff to get into. It really, really is. This stuff never, ever, ever stops being interesting because it affects our lives. This isn't a game. This is real life. And that's why we come at you with Straight Shooter. because we ain't playing. Hour number two up next. Let's get it. Welcome to hour number two, A Straight Shooter with Stephen A. coming at you every Wednesday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of SiriusXM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. Before I get to my next guest, I want to explain to you what's essentially going on. My next guest, who will be on in a minute, is a new representative-elect out of Arizona, the 7th Congressional District in Arizona. And she has yet to be sworn in by Speaker Mike Johnson, who has refused to do so while the government is shut down and not in session. Nevertheless, there's been a big brouhaha over that. And before I go to my next guest, I want you to hear Speaker Mike Johnson and the explanation he's provided as to why he has not sworn her in as of yet. Take a listen.
First of all, I'm following the Pelosi precedent. I was on some of the Sunday shows and was asked about this because this is all they have to talk about right now. When Julia Letlow was elected under very similar circumstances to fill the seat of her her deceased husband who passed away tragically by COVID, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi at the time, took 25 days to administer the oath of office to her. It wasn't just Julia. The Pelosi precedent extends even further because when Pat Ryan and Joe Cipollinski were elected during an August recess, they waited 21 days to administer the oath to those two rep-elects because they were not in session. We are not in legislative session.
There you have it. That's his position, Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. My next guest won a special election, as I told you, to represent Arizona's Democratic 7th Congressional District last month, but is yet to be sworn in. Please welcome to the show U.S. Representative-elect Adelita Grijalva. Good evening. How are you? How's everything?
It's okay. Thanks for having me on your show.
It's an honor to have you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule. Now, the Arizona Attorney General has sued the U.S. House of Representatives over Speaker Mike Johnson's refusal to seat you. Why do you think he won't swear you in?
I believe that it's because I'm going to be the 218th signer to the discharge petitions to release the Epstein files. Because there doesn't seem to be any other correlation to delaying me other than the previous three members that he swore in under 24 hours from the date of their special election were Caucasian males. Mm. That's the only other issue. This Chicana from Arizona, they keep changing the rules. They keep changing the criteria. You know, first it was I wasn't certified. My race wasn't certified. The previous three were not certified either. Then it was, we're in a shutdown. Well, there was a whole freshman class sworn in without under and not in a shutdown. And it's this excuse, I think, that is being told about, you know, it's just excuse after excuse. It's like, well, we don't swear in on a pro forma session, but yet you swore in two Republicans on April 2nd in a pro forma session. So every excuse that he gives is just that, an excuse. And I think that, you know, he also ended votes early in order to avoid a vote on the Epstein files and sent everyone home a week early. So there is definitely a pattern of doing everything possible to avoid these getting out. And I think Arizona is collateral damage in this, you know, obstruction.
How would you respond to Speaker Johnson's assertion that he's just following the Pelosi precedent where she took over 20 days or so to swear in reps Julia Letlow and Pat Ryan?
I think he's just coming up with excuses to try to justify why it's okay to keep someone out of office for now 29 days. It isn't. And this speaker swore in three people in under 24 hours from the date of their election. So let's just focus on that. And the others, you know, he's throwing in Pat Ryan. Pat Ryan's like, hey, don't include me in, you know, as justification for you protecting pedophiles.
Mm. You won the seat formerly held by your late father, Raul Grijalva, who passed away in March, right? You know, God bless you and your family. Sorry for your loss. Let me ask you, what will be your top priority from day one once you're sworn in?
You know, I need to sign that discharge petition and then need to get to work in co-sponsoring legislation that is affecting all of the nation, but really Arizonans. One of them would be several discharge petitions that are out there, including rolling back these emergency executive powers that Trump has, and you know, unilaterally just destroying every white right we have in this nation. The other is there's several pieces of legislation, including protecting our environment, environmental justice for all, rebuilding our Department of Education, the Department of Labor. I mean, there's so many protections that our communities don't have anymore because this administration doesn't think they're important, even though they affect the 99% of us.
Representative-elect, what would your dad say? What would he want from you right now, the minute you were sworn in? It's one thing to ask you what you're going to do. What would he want you to do?
You know, our values are very similar. I mean, obviously, I am very proud to be Raul Grijalva's daughter. And so, you know, I grew up in a household that was all about service and sticking up for those who cannot stand up for themselves. And so that's what I have done, tried to do my whole life. And I have heard nothing but rave reviews about the kind of member of Congress that my dad was while he was here. So he set the bar incredibly high. And, you know, he just want me to do my best.
You know, when I think of going back to the whole Epstein file thing, the only issue I have with that is that, you know what, the Epstein files existed when Biden was in office and the Democrats didn't make much noise about it then. So I'm hard pressed to believe. I find myself saying to myself, if they had something on Trump, don't you think they would have let it out then before the election? I mean, how do you answer that to a person just purviewing the landscape, looking at things right now and saying, is it really about the Epstein files when they had this available to them when they were in power and they knew Trump was trying to regain power?
Well, but this was not an issue for Democrats. We're not the ones that made it a cornerstone of our campaign. Trump did. Trump said on day one, I'm going to release those files. Then he got into office and I think got a good look at what was in those files and thought better of it. If he's not implicated, then somebody, big supporters, are implicated. I mean, Epstein ran in circles of the pretty elite. So there must be some direction coming from somewhere to do everything that they can to keep these files a secret. And for me, what's more important is to give justice to the survivors of that were victimized by the people that are implicated. And that's really giving voice to them and getting justice for anyone who is implicated in those files. I don't care who it is.
Let me transition to another issue. Right now, 812,000 Arizonans do not have representation in Congress because you haven't been sworn in. How has the ongoing shutdown affected your constituents in your mind? And what will you do to address this issue once you're seated?
You know, one of the things, my dad passed away in March. And while Arizona, Southern Arizona did not have a voice here anymore, constituent services continued in district. So all of the services in Tucson and Summerton, Douglas, Nogales, there was still staff going out and providing services. Those have since ceased since September 23rd. All of the leases were canceled by the House. And I understand that. That seat is closed. Now, I have to reestablish services in districts, and I can't do that without a budget. I can't do that without like going through these ethics trainings to make sure that our staff are fully prepared for everything that comes up, having access to databases. I mean, really, what Speaker Johnson is trying to do is he's insulting me on a pretty regular basis about I shouldn't be doing TikToks and I should be doing other things. Well, respectfully, I wouldn't be on social media talking about this if I were already sworn in. This would not be an issue. So stop watching my videos and swear me in. We won't have a problem here. And I cannot provide the full representation that Southern Arizona deserves until I am sworn in.
Does he have to be the one to swear you in? Can anybody else swear you in?
You know, really, a notary, another member of Congress can swear me in. A federal judge can swear me in. The only issue is that it requires an act of Congress or a letter from the speaker, some sort of designation that this is the person that he or she is designating to do this.
So you can't get an act of Congress. You can't get action on the part of Congress. You can't get a letter from the Speaker of the House. Both have been null and void. That's basically what you're saying.
Basically, yes. And if he doesn't want to issue me the, you know, swear me in, that's totally fine. I'm happy to get sworn in district. I don't need the bells and whistles. I don't need the pomp and circumstance. I just need to get sworn in. One of the, just to give you an example, when I'm coming into this building, I get into the line with the public to go through security because I don't have a PIN.
Right.
I don't have, I am not a member of Congress. And it is, I am reminded of it every time I'm here in DC and every time I hear about people going to my dad's old office trying to get help from Grijalva, because this community, our community, is used to reaching out to Grijalvas for the last 50 years.
So you're in Washington right now?
Yes, sir.
You're in Washington right now. You're online with regular folks and you know, you don't have access to all the things your dad and now you as the representative-elect succeeding him should have access to.
Correct. And when you see me come out with other members of the Democratic caucus down the Capitol steps, someone has to come get me from the line at security because I don't have a PIN to get me in.
Your district covers Tucson and a large part of Arizona's southern border with Mexico. How have ICE raids impacted your cities?
You know, the three ports of entry with Mexico and Arizona are in CD7. So we have a large number of Latino community, a large number of mixed status families, immigrant families, families that have been here for generations, and ICE is targeting all of us. If you don't, if they think that you are undocumented, they'll follow you. We've heard of that from the Tohonatam Nation on Pascuayaki tribal land, all throughout our communities. I mean, I was pumping gas with my son, and two people jumped out of a nondescript vehicle wearing civilian clothing, a bulletproof vest, and a mask, and were dragging a woman out of a car. Like, this is happening in real time every day. They're parked outside of our Home Depots. They're parked outside of our schools. What possible crime could an elementary school student have committed to warrant that kind of harassment? That's what's happening every day. And the fear, I mean, you feel it when you're in our community.
Republicans will ask, how do you expect them to address illegal immigration in the United States of America, particularly with the existence of sanctuary cities and particularly with the existence of many, many legal immigrants who do everything they can to assist illegal immigrants? This is what they would ask. What would your response to that be?
Well, one, that's completely misleading and ridiculous. We have so many hardworking immigrant families that are the backbone of our entire nation. Our nation was built on immigrant labor and people of color and a sacrifice to create this system that we have right now. And we have people that have been following every single rule. They go to every court hearing, which is why ICE is showing up to court hearings, because they know where you live. You've provided the information. You are actually working and paying taxes on a system that you'll never get that money back, but you're trying to establish, I am part of this community. And the problem that we have here is that this idea that immigrant labor is, you know, we're the scapegoats for everything that's going wrong in this nation. If that were the case, then why is our economy going down since we've had so many people deported and not up? Mm. Why is the impact from, you hear it from farmers, you hear it from the healthcare community. There are so many communities that have been like dependent on labor. And this idea that, you know, we don't have a pathway to citizenship. Mm-hmm. We don't have a pathway to legalization. There is a woman that is in detention that owns three restaurants in Arizona, employs 70 people, and was detained. How does that make sense when she clearly is not only paying taxes, but is here with permission?
But you are the daughter of a former politician, God rest his soul. You're familiar with how politics are played. So, Representative-elect, I'd ask you this question. You know what they're going to say. You know everything gets politicized. Everybody's looking for a political advantage, right? And if the Republicans are saying, okay, focusing on illegal immigration is what got us back into office in 2024, courtesy of Donald Trump. How do you, as a member of the Democratic Party, fend that off? Because the very, very battles that you're fighting right now, the Republicans will make the argument that's the one thing that's working for them, because it looks like American citizens are more supportive, or the Democratic Party, rather, is more supportive for illegal migrants as opposed to anything else. How do you fend that off to make sure you win an election in the midterms and beyond?
Well, I think that what you're seeing is a lot of people with buyer's remorse. You're seeing a lot of people that have been a part of this country, have been here for 20 years and are being deported. We see veterans being deported. Citizens are being deported and detained. And so this overreach, if you think that this is too much now, wait until ICE has 20 times the budget that they were allocated this year. Trump is setting up his own army that is going to be fighting against us. He's already laid out his plan with sending the National Guard in to attack communities that never asked him for the help. So what this is just scapegoating anybody. And you have to remember that now they're coming for Latinos. Whoever's coming next, better watch out, because really all Trump is doing is targeting anyone that does not support his ideology and does not look like him.
Polarization that exists in Washington is very palpable. My last question to you, because you seem fit for the job, I can tell you that much. You seem ready to fight with the best of them. How do you plan on fending that off? How do you plan on helping in that fight, in that regard? I'm talking about the polarization in Washington, to be exact. How are you going to pull that off?
You know, part of the problem is that if the nation doesn't want us to be this polarized, they have to look at the people that they're electing. And if you have people that are willing to work across the aisle, because that's what you want done, because that ultimately is what is going to be best for the American people, then you need to elect people that are not going to be divisive and split us up between the have and the have-nots, that continue to vote in favor of policies that hurt you in your communities. Who do you think utilizes more Medicaid and Social Security and benefits that are federal government benefits? Those are bright red states, not bright blue. So when these policies go into effect and people start getting their notices, like in Arizona, they're getting them on November 1 when these ACA benefits are gone, the subsidies are gone, and then you start to look at whether you're still going to be able to have any kind of health care. All of a sudden, people are going to be turning and saying, what are you doing as an elected official? And part of the problem is that it is this separation that we're in this position right now because we don't have Republicans that are willing to work with Democrats. Democrats have been here and Republicans have been on vacation since the shutdown, since September 19th. Haven't been in session since then.
So very last question, when do you expect this to be resolved and to be sworn in?
I have no idea. You know, I'm going to be on a show shortly after Speaker Johnson. And so maybe that would be a question that I can ask him when I see him. Because one of the problems right now is that there has been no direct communication with me and Speaker Johnson or his office, other than sort of the, you know, snarky comments that he makes to press about me. He doesn't know me, never even attempted to try to schedule a time to get me sworn in, because the goal has always been to obstruct my swearing in from day one.
Representative, Arizona representative-elect Adelita Grijalva, you're live here right here, Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. It's very kind of you. Very nice to meet you. And I wish you nothing but the best. Hope you get sworn in very, very soon.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure. Here we go. 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. You heard what she had to say. Phones lines are open. What y'all got to say about all of that? You heard from Governor Pritzker. You heard from Representative-elect Grijalva. You heard what she said. I mean, what excuse is there? Is it really about the Epstein files? Is it really that bad? It sounds like it's a lot more than that, because she got a lot of stuff to say that the Republicans kind of need to answer for. No doubt about that. More to come on Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Don't go away. Very interesting conversations right here on Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Number to call up is 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. over SiriusXM. POTUS Radio, Channel 124. Day 22 of the government shutdown, second longest funding lapse in modern history, eclipsed only by 35-day shutdown in late 2018 and early 2019. Trump is saying we will not be extorted into giving into Democrats' demands. My point is, what about the American people? I mean, it can't be just about getting everything we want, because we could use a bully pulpit and do that. At some point in time, federal workers are not being paid. You know, people are losing their jobs, losing the ability to pay their bills. They're saying that the military will get back pay once everything is resolved. But damn that, what about now? Especially if congressional and Senate figures and folks on Capitol Hills are able to get paid. Something wrong with that picture. Something's very, very wrong with that picture. 888-967-6887. That's the number to call. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Derek in New York. You're live with Stephen A. Talk to me, Derek. How are you?
Doing good.
Derek, turn your radio down. Turn your radio down and talk to me directly, please. I don't want to hear any background music. Go ahead.
Okay. Do you think that Mike Lohr with Hakeem Jeffries, do you think it was wrong to Mike Lohr to fight in Congress?
I don't understand. You're going in and out. You're going in and out. I don't understand your question. You're asking me about Hakeem Jeffries?
Or confront Hakeem Jeffries a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
A couple weeks ago. 2 weeks ago.
Okay, what about
ago.
It?
Did you saw that him argue with Hakeem Jeffries or what?
Listen, I don't, damn it, he's going in and out. I will tell you this, Hakeem Jeffries, here's what I would say about Hakeem Jeffries in the shutdown. I think that he's tried to make a very, very compelling case because he said they've been there ready to negotiate to make a deal. I don't think it's much of a negotiation if you're saying this is something that we absolutely positively are not budging on. Because obviously Trump and the GOP are going to hold the line. He had him at the White House and on a Rose Garden, and he was talking about how they're not budging. And this is the problem. This is the problem that I hate with one-party rule, because it doesn't have to be a negotiation. If the GOP has control of the White House, the Senate, and the House, they don't have to do a negotiation. They're the ones in power. And so what happens is that you have both sides thinking that the American people are going to blame the other side for this shutdown. And they're holding on to that to justify their rigidity. And that ain't going to work for anybody. That's how I'm looking at it. Something's got to be done. Figure it out. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Mike in Illinois. You're live with Stephen A. What's up, Mike? How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I was just listening to your discussion with our governor, and he talks a good game, but he's put a lot of taxes on the backs of Illinois citizens since he's been in office. And as far as his popularity and love, you might want to take a look at our congressional maps and how they're gerrymandered, because it's not due to his popularity that he gets elected.
Well, let me say this to you. I certainly didn't say whether he was popular or not. I brought him on here to talk about Trump, about ICE, and about the crime that was going on in the streets of Chicago, Illinois. I didn't get into all of that. Okay, I'm not aware of how popular he is or lack thereof. I know that when you look at the state of Illinois and that flat income tax rate of 4.95% for both individuals and corporations, that's a hell of a lot better than New York, New Jersey, or California. That I know. I know that the crime needs to be addressed. They're saying that the numbers show it has been addressed. How true that is remains to be seen. But that's what he's saying. He has his position. I'm sure the GOP will have theirs. We'll see if he wins re-election. The people of Illinois will speak to that. I'm not aware of a lot of things that's going on with him in terms of his popularity. I know I've seen him all over the place speaking about the state of Illinois and how he's not going to bow to Trump and what Trump is trying to do in terms of imposing his will on the city of Chicago. And I personally think this is important to say. Listen, I don't like the idea of the National Guard in any city. They're not supposed to be policing. But if you're going to bring them in Washington, D.C., I understand, because that's run by the federal government. But when you're talking about subverting the Constitution and usurping the authority, of governors who are the chief executive officers of their state. That's problematic. The commander in chief of the state is the one in charge of the National Guard. And to me, the president shouldn't be imposing his will upon individual states like that. That's my feeling. Now, he's going to try to challenge that. He goes through the courts, he pushes the envelopes, and then we see what the courts will decide and what the courts will say about all of that. Fair enough. But I don't like that. What I don't like either, however, is that if you're a state and you are in desperate need of assistance, don't be hesitant to ask. If the feds can help you, let them help you. Let them help you. If they can help you reduce crime, if they can help safety in the streets, then let them. That's how I feel about it. But I don't think that the president should be usurping the authority of governors in order to do that. That's against the Constitution. And I'm not supportive of that. So that's how I look at it. And it's as simple as that to me. Anything else more expansive than that, I'd have to do my homework on that. But that's how plain it seems to me. Robert in Pennsylvania, you're live with Stephen A. What's up, Robert? How are you?
Yeah, the biggest thing that I'm saying is this. The president of the United States is supposed to bring people together. And this president we have, he's doing everything in his power to make it fall apart. Mm-hmm. He called the Democrats scoundrels and whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where's the leadership? The leadership should be in the president. He should be willing to sit down and say, okay, look, I realize all the health insurance premiums are going up. This is what we're going to do to fix it. Mm-hmm. And not be sitting there holding back, telling his Republican counterparts, don't talk to them. Don't do this. Don't do that.
Okay.
Where's the leadership at?
Hold on, Robert. That's fair. I think that's fair on your part. What if his retort is, they hate me so much on the other side, they have zero interest in trying to work out a deal, so why even bother?
That's not even true, man.
Whoa, stop right there. It's not true that the other side hates Donald Trump. I think you know that's true. You do know that's true. You have to know that's true. You can't say that's not true, Robert.
I'm not saying we don't hate the man.
No, I'm not talking about you. No. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the politicians. I'm talking about the competitions on Capitol Hill who are on the opposite side of the aisle. I'm not talking about you or the voter out there. I'm talking about the elected officials on Capitol Hill who are supposed to be working with one another. You do understand that when it comes to Donald Trump, the other side hates him. You know that, right?
But then you still have to turn and learn how to work with him.
I agree.
Regardless of that.
Well, let me say this to you. One would argue, who's the obligation on? The one in power or those seeking it? Because he's the one in power, and he has the House and the Senate to help him. So if he's the one in power and he has the House and the Senate that shares his ideology, or they're on the same side of the aisle as him, then the onus is on the party on the outside trying to regain power to figure out a way to pull it off. Is that not correct?
Well, that's the reason why we said to him, we're not going to go through this. You're going to have to sit down and talk.
Okay. Fair. That's what they're saying. Let's sit down and talk, because nothing's going to get done if we just capitulate to you and don't sit down and have a conversation. That's fair enough, Robert. I can live with that. Let's go to Steve in Chicago. You're live with Stephen A. What's up, Steve? Beautiful name. Steve, go ahead. You're live on the air. Steve, you're live on the air.
Supposedly.
Steve, go ahead. Start over, Steve. Now we can hear you. We couldn't hear you before. We can hear you now. Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Good. How do you feel about the shutdown being blamed on Democrats supposedly wanting to give free health care to immigrants when it really looks like it's about denying affordable health care to the American people?
I don't know. It depends on what the facts are. I will tell you this. I'm a human being first. I'm for all of humanity, and I don't want anybody out there suffering, and I don't want anybody out there devoid of medical treatment. Having said all of that, I do believe in this country, when you are an American taxpayer and you're paying your taxpayer dollars, I can't fault you for prioritizing Americans first. It shouldn't be Americans only. because we should be about humanity and human beings. But I don't have a problem with you prioritizing Americans first. And if you have the Affordable Care Act, and you have 24 million plus people, you know, additional people on the Affordable Care Act. We got a $37.8 trillion federal deficit, and we're hemorrhaging money and stuff like that. And somehow, some way, you know, dues are going to be paid, and you got to call in the chips, and you got to curb spending to some degree. You're going to see people suffering. You're going to see less money being allocated to certain programs, less money being allocated to certain issues, causes, etc. I think that stuff is inevitable. Everybody just wants to continue to spend and spend and spend, and nobody wants to cut. But when you got $37.8 trillion in debt, eventually you're going to have to cut something. There's no way around it. So whatever that is, and you have to figure that out. And that's why I want the Republicans and the Democrats to come together, because if they come together on a plan, then America is cool, because we're able to say, okay, our elected officials came together on a bipartisan basis and decided this was in the best interest of the country. We're good with that. The problem is mayhem and chaos, because one side is always swearing that the other's the devil. And so depending on what side of the aisle you're on, polarization kicks in and we erode from there, and we're left scratching and clawing against one another because we want everybody to be like-minded in our thinking, and we're believing one side over the other as opposed to saying they came together and came to the best conclusion for the American citizen. That's my issue. That's my problem, Stephen. That's the best way I can answer your question.
We need more love, basically. We need more humanity.
Well, we need more than love. We need more than love. We need people who know what they're doing and know how to handle a budget and know how to not spend to a point where, you know, ultimately we find ourselves $37 trillion in debt, and we're going to have to pay the piper some down the line. We need to do better than that. Okay. We need to do better than that. It's just that simple. Appreciate the call, though, Steve. Thank you. Let's go to Jack in North Carolina. You're live with Stephen A. Talk to me, Jack. How are you?
How are you, Stephen?
I'm doing all right. Thank you for calling. Thank you for calling to the show. What's up?
I usually hear your voice at 10 a.m., but this is a nice venue, too.
Thank you, man. Go ahead. Floor's yours.
I'm from New York. I retired in a rural county in North Carolina, probably about 20,000 people. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any ICE agents, but I would love an explanation. I think, you know, these agents wearing, you know, is it balaclava? Am I saying that right? You can help me out.
I'm sorry, with who?
Those masks.
Keep going.
Yeah,
Keep going.
I think that's all about intimidation. I don't think that's about masking identities. I don't think anyone's really getting doxxed.
Well,
I mean,
well, but we don't know. We don't know. Here's what we do know. What we do know is that while the GOP swears that ICE agents are being attacked, and according to Tom Homan, the border czar, the rates of attacks are about up 1,000% compared to what it used to be, et cetera, against ICE agents. The flip side to that is that law enforcement officials anywhere else don't get to disguise their identity. They don't get to do that. So if they have to come up with you and identify themselves and who they are, why should ICE agents be any different? That's what people argue. And I can't knock that argument. All right? Appreciate the call, Jack. Bill, California, you're live with Stephen A. What's up, Bill?
Stephen A., I love you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Are shooting it the way it needs to be shot. My only concern is I feel like this is a professional sporting event between both parties.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, we cannot go, like you say, point fingers to that person or that party. We need to come together, walk a straight line, like mm-hmm. you say.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so proud that you have this show and this opportunity for many of us who are, shall we say, given up on a party, who was part of a party, and who hasn't voted, just because of what we see on a daily basis,
mm-hmm.
or listen to, or know where this country's going in debt and everything else. And I really appreciate this opportunity to speak to you. And I really wish you would get more involved in the political arena.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll think about it. Bill, I appreciate the call, though. Thank you for those words, those complimentary words. I really appreciate that. I doubt I'd do that, though. Life is rough out here in politics. I tell you that much. It's new to me. But anyway, let's go to Terrence, Minnesota. You're live with Stephen A. Terrence, thank you for your call. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Hi, Stephen. Nice to be on with you.
Thank you, sir.
What I want to mention is I believe it's defeatist. It's anti-American. It's un-American to be defeatist. And, you know, the argument that you presented that could, you know, perhaps the other side, you know, the right side is saying, you know, Trump, I can't, those people hate me so much that I can't work with them. They don't want to work with me, so why even try? And that just
I didn't say that's how he should think. I said, what about the argument that they would try to make? What do you say to that? Me asking the question doesn't mean I vibe with it. It means I'm taking into consideration and I'm contemplating what their argument is going to be. It's like if you're competing, Terrence, right? And you're competing against somebody. Terrence, do you like basketball?
I love the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Okay, fine. You like basketball, right? So you don't just go out there and practice to do what you do. You take into account what the game plan is going to be against you. And you adapt accordingly to make sure you can exploit whatever you can to gain an advantage. That's what I'm talking about. I in no way implied that that's what the attitude of the president should be. What I said was, because that might be the case, what do you say to that if you're a member of the Democratic Party? That he could say, you hate me, you don't want to negotiate. All you want to do is get your way or nothing at all. So why even bother? How do you respond to that? That's all I was asking. I wasn't saying right.
Yes. And that is, yes, I understood you correctly, and I may have misstated how I had heard you. But, yes, that is how I heard you, just as you stated. So I agree with that. And what I would say is that you demonstrate, and then you show the mass, the people, the childish, petulant nature of that way of being. You know what I mean? It's like...
Okay. But let me ask you this question, Terrence. Let me put you on a spot here before I let you go, okay? What if the petulance, the juvenile tendencies, just the abhorrent behavior is usurped in people's eyes or compared anyway, according to policy? I know a lot of Republicans that don't give a damn about Trump and how he acts. And they're like, it's appalling. It's embarrassing. It's beneath the office of the presidency. But policy wise, because they don't have issues with him on a policy basis, they say that's what really, really matters to the lives of the American citizen. And they don't care. They'll tolerate it because at least that's what they're getting. Where do you fall in that?
I believe that the American people deserve better than that, because as a whole, we are better than that.
We do deserve
better.
What if you don't get better? What then? That's what I'm asking. Of course we deserve better. I think we deserve better than a lot of people. I think we deserve better than what Biden gave us. I think we deserve better than what Trump gave us. I think we deserve better than what a lot of officials have given us over the years. What I'm saying is that doesn't mean we always get it. What do you do then? Most people will lean on policy rather than behavior. That's all I'm saying.
That's fair. I'm taking it all in.
Yeah. All right.
I just feel 100% that.
I got you. I understand. Because we got to go to break. I appreciate the call. 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. Back to close out the show with more of your calls in a minute. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Don't go away. Before I get back to the phones, right here on Straight Shooter, Stephen A, 866-967-6887, that's 866-96-POTUS. Let's hear from both speakers for the House and the Senate. I'm talking about John Thune, and of course you have Democratic Speaker Hakeem Jeffries. Let's hear from Hakeem Jeffries first. Listen to what he has to say.
Donald Trump has spent more time on the golf course than he has in talking to Democrats on Capitol Hill to reopen the government, to enact a spending agreement that's bipartisan, and to address the Republican health care crisis. His behavior, unpresidential, unhinged, unpatriotic, un-American, throughout this process, speaks for itself and makes clear that Republicans shut the government down and have had zero interest in opening it up. Why? Because they'd rather inflict this kind of pain on hardworking federal civil servants and the American people than provide health care that's affordable to everyday Americans, working class Americans, and middle class Americans.
That was Democratic House Leader Hakeem Jeffries. Senator Thune, out of South Dakota, Republican senator, he had a retort to that. Let's hear what he had to say.
Had a great opportunity to meet with the president and talk about something that unifies all Republicans. Senate Republicans, House Republicans, and the President of the United States are all in favor of reopening the federal government. In fact, so much so that we've now all voted 11 times to reopen the federal government. But the longer the federal government stays closed, the more the impacts are being felt. Travel delays, benefit delays, farmers are being impacted, millions of people going without paychecks. That's what this government shutdown, Democrat government shutdown, is bringing to the American people. So we're hopeful that this will be the week when we break out of this and the Democrats come to their senses and decide to open up the government. We're going to give them several opportunities, as you know, to do that.
Back to the phones. Sean in North Carolina, you're live with Stephen A. What's up, Sean?
Stephen, how you doing today? Am I wrong that you just had some dental stuff?
Yes, no, you're not wrong. I had a double root canal surgery. That's why my face is swollen.
So
I'm looking
sorry.
Like a damn chipmunk, but I'm okay. Go ahead, buddy. Go ahead.
Yeah. I just feel that right now, one of the biggest problems is that I heard you share about like Americans deserve, and there was a lot of that using that word.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that that's a problem that's caused some apathy in the movements of Americans. And we're not doing the work to be Americans.
Mm-hmm.
We just feel like we deserve something. And by voting in or hiring these people to do this work, expecting something, is making so many challenges. I just don't think 15 years ago that this wheel would be turning the way it's turning right now.
Well, it's turning the way that it's turning because we've lost our way as a country. We're too polarized, and we're not interested in compromise. We consider compromise a weakness. And instead of acknowledging the fact that everybody doesn't get to get what they want to get. You know, I've been, in my lifetime, I've negotiated many, many contracts. I walk in understanding I'm not getting everything I want. It's an understanding that comes with it. The goal is to get as much as I can and to have a baseline that I know I'm going to deem satisfactory. And then everything from there, you make a decision based on what's in front of your face. But it's never, I refuse to talk to these people. It's never, I don't want to talk to these people. It's never, I hate these people. It's never that, because you always have to keep your ears open and percolating, because you never know what's going to come your way that you can find and deem advantageous for you, your side, et cetera, et cetera. And unfortunately, we've gotten away from that, Sean, and I think that's our problem. But I appreciate the call. Thank you so much for your call. Go ahead, Sean, real quick. I'm sorry. Real quick, Sean. Go ahead and finish your thought.
No, I was just saying, you're choosing relationship with the whole of something rather than what I want. And that's where the wisdom is. I really appreciate that.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Let's go to Reese in California. You're live with Stephen A. Reese, thank you for your call. Thank you for calling into the show.
Man, I really never thought I would ever come even close to having anything kind of conversation with you.
Sure.
I am not a fan. I'm not a fan. I just hear me out. I'm not a fan.
Okay.
I never really was a fan. However, I've noticed you've always seemed to talk on out of both sides of your neck.
Okay.
And you and my kids call it rage bait.
Okay.
Like, I listen to people, it's like clickbait. You're like, ooh, what is that about? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you click on it, and then it gains more momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, brother, you've been really dissing people of color for a long time. Mm-hmm. I research you. Yes, you do give black. You do give back to the community. I get that. It's not what you say. Sometimes it's what you do. But then it's also what you say. Mm-hmm. And then what you do. I've noticed you now you're saying you're apologizing for something you said or didn't intend for that to be said mm-hmm. on your show about Jasmine Crockett.
Yeah.
However, you said it.
Okay.
Right. And then you come back and now you say, I didn't mean it that way. And but the thing, the power you have is beyond maybe you might understand. And maybe you do understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Me and my friends have a debate. I call you a Disney character because you are getting paid by Disney. Mm-hmm. You're there to perform. I respected you when you was a reporter, a sports mm-hmm. reporter, mm-hmm. a sports writer. Mm-hmm. I respected you more then than I do now.
Maurice, let me say this to you. Okay. You're entitled to your feelings. But I want you to stay on the phone. Don't hang up on him. Reese, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Reese?
I hear you.
Okay. First of all, my only regret about accepting this phone call from you is that I didn't accept it earlier because I'd love to have more time because I don't mind what you said. I'm not offended by what you said at all. Let me be very, very clear. You're entitled to your feelings. I would tell you, I'm not a pretend baby or anything like that. I say what I mean and I mean what I say. But I have to acknowledge when people feel something different because people remember how you feel more than what you do a lot, or how you make them feel rather, more than what you do sometimes. When it came in the case of Jasmine Crockett, in my mind, I asked a question. I said, if you're calling the president out his name and you represent hundreds of thousands of constituents, how is that going to work for you? I wasn't asking that question to denigrate her. I was asking that question because I know who he is and how he would ISO her constituents just to get at her. So I'm looking at it from that standpoint, and I'm talking about strategy for winning because you got a midterm election coming up. Hakeem Jeffries going at him the way that he is right now. It may be smart for him to do that. Why? Because you got a shutdown going on, and it might be politically advantageous for him to do that. If I sit up there and you say, I'm talking out of both sides, well, to me, well, listen, there are certain things I'm liberal about. There are certain things I'm fiscal about. I'm fiscal about taxes. I can't stand taxes in California, New York, and New Jersey. Okay? But I'm liberal in my life, in the way of my thinking and everything else. I just can't stand high taxes. Okay? You could sit up there and say, I'm pro-life because I'm against abortion. But I don't believe in telling a woman what to do with her body, so I'm pro-choice. So we can say those kind of things, and I understand that. All I would ask from you in return, Reese, is just like I just listened to you, rather than be annoyed by my position, how about hearing it and understanding where I'm coming from and going like this? Can we disagree? Do I have to be all of those things that you alluded to me being just because we disagree? I'm quite sure that there's some things you might feel based on how you came at me. And that I might disagree with. You know what I wouldn't do, Reese? I wouldn't disrespect you. I wouldn't sit up there and say, you're an idiot. You're this, you're that, because of how you're thinking. I would say, why are you thinking like that? Here's what I think. Here are my facts. And you just finished saying, Reese, my actions speak for themselves. Because you know I give back to the community. You know I'm big on HBCUs. You know how many people that I've helped to diversify in this business and what have you. And by the way, my only check ain't coming from ESPN. I get a check from SiriusXM too. Plus, I own my own production company. Plus, I own a few things. So I'm all right. My point to you is that I do these things. My point is it's okay to feel that way. It's all right. As long as we don't have to disrespect one another. You got 20 seconds. I'll give you a last. 20 seconds. It's yours. Just real quick, because we got
to
go.
Now that I've talked to you, it's not such raving, but I really would say that I've heard you over a period of time, which gives me my feelings and my thoughts of you.
But, okay. Can you do me a favor, Reese? Can you do me a favor? Can we end this call like this?
Yes.
Call back anytime. I'll put you on every week, bro.
Gotcha.
Can you do that?
Gotcha.
No problem.
Word up.
Take it easy. That's it for this edition of Straight Shooter. I love calls like that. I don't mind people disagreeing with me. At least he was honest about it, told me how he felt, and I let him speak his mind. That's what I'm here for, y'all. It's Straight Shooter. It ain't just about what I give. It's about what I can take. Holla at y'all next week. Until then, peace and love.